We're in Shir Kali on the Parsha on Parshat Mishpatim. Up until now, looking at the overall narrative of Sefer Shmot, we've had a very clear narrative. We were in Mitzrayim, we were slaves, we experienced, or we watched Egypt experience the Aseret HaMakot, the Ten Makot. We then get taken out of Mitzrayim. We come to the Yam Suf, HaKadosh Baruch Hu saves us and wipes out the Mitzrayim. The goal of taking us out of Yitzias Mitzrayim was to make us into His people, and the way that we become His people is by coming to Har Sinai and receiving the Torah. One swift motion. 50 days from Yitzias Mitzrayim. Great. Then comes Parshat Mishpatim. What is Parshat Mishpatim doing here? What is Parshat Mishpatim? What's happening in Parshat Mishpatim? What's the juicy story in Parshat Mishpatim? Anybody? It's Wednesday. Steinmaker should have started. New? Louder? Laws. There is no story in Parshat Mishpatim, seemingly. It's a lot of laws. It's a lot of halachot. Almost every other pasuk, or every single new paragraph, is a whole new set of halachot, going from slavery, murder, injury, property damage, shomrim, damage through relationships, through seduction, other issues, ger, yatom, and almanah, judges and kings. An endless list of laws. It's in fact one of only three parshiot in the Torah that are so densely packed in this way with halachot. You have this parsha, Parshat Mishpatim and Shmot, in Vayikra, Parsha Kedoshim, and in Devarim, Parshat Ki Tetzeh. And it seems to interrupt the flow of the narrative of Shmot. What is it doing here? Why is it here? Thinking of that narrative, when does it even take place? We know exactly how the story goes from beginning to end, from when we were slaves until Matan Torah. And honestly, when we get past Parshat Mishpatim, there are some arguments of exactly the nature of the order of events. But somewhere in there is Chet HaEgel, things go wrong, and then we fix it, and then we build the Mishkan. When does Parshat Mishpatim take place? What is this parasha? What is it trying to accomplish? What is it doing here? So since our keyword here, and those who are in the Midrash know that this is my bumper sticker, right? What's the keyword that we always emphasize? Narrative. Is that we're not just looking at the Sefer as a whole, but to look at each Parasha as a whole. And Parshat Mishpatim answers these questions if one simply goes all the way to the end of Parshat Mishpatim. So let's take a look at the end of Parshat Mishpatim together. It's source number one on your sheets, in your Chumashim, Perek Chavdalid, Pasuk Aleph. Vel Moshe Amar, this is after all of the laws. Vel Moshe Amar, Aleil Hashem, Atavi Aaron Nadav Avihu, you Aaron Nadav and Avihu, v'shivim mizikne Yisrael and the zakenim, v'hishtachavita merachok. V'anigash Moshe levado, and Moshe alone goes up El Hashem, v'im lo yigashu v'ha'am lo yalu imo. And they shouldn't come up, only you, you're the only one who's going to go up into Har Sinai. Vayavo Moshe vayisaper la'am et kol divrei Hashem ve'et kol ha'mishpatim. Moshe then tells over all of the devarim of Hashem and all of the mishpatim. Vayan kol la'am kol echad vayomru kol avim asher diber Hashem naseh. And the nation says, everything that God says I will do. Skipping forward. Pasuk Zayin, the underline, the second underline. Vayikach sefer habrit vayikrena be'ozne ha'am. And Moshe takes the sefer habrit and reads it into the ears of Bnei Yisrael v'yamru, and Bnei Yisrael say, Kol asher diber Hashem na'aseh v'nishma. Everything that God says na'aseh v'nishma. When does na'aseh v'nishma happen? What is na'aseh v'nishma the conclusion of? Not a trick question. We've got everybody out loud together. What is it the end of? Matan Torah, right? God gives over the Torah, and the conclusion. We talked about this last week. This was like the topic of last week. The end of Matan Torah is when we respond and we accept the Torah and we say Naaseh v'nishma, clearly indicating that Parshat Mishpatim is the conclusion of Matan Torah. This parsha is here, I mean, we would have assumed this, but this clarifies it, is here very intentionally. The parshiot of Matan Torah are Yitro and Mishpatim. They're two halves of one whole. This is emphasized in the very beginning of the parasha, now that we can go back and we can understand it. Take a look at the first pasuk, which is also source number two on your sheets. Perek Chaf Aleph Pasuk Aleph, the opening Pasuk of Parashat Mishpatim, the Eile HaMishpatim Asher Tasim Lifnehem, and these are the Mishpatim that you shall place before them. These are the Mishpatim you shall place before them. What, again, Rashi and the Mefarshim and Chazal, because Rashi is going to quote Chazal, deal with this question: when is this taking place? What's going on? And so he says in source number 3, Rashi on that Pasuk, that when it says ve'ela, it's adding on to what came before, and therefore, says Rashi, maharishonim misinai, af elu misinai. Just like Parshat Yitro was from Har Sinai, so too the Mishpatim were from Har Sinai. These are two paths of Matan Torah. Taking this as fact, these are the two halves of Matan Torah, these are two parshiot of Matan Torah. The question then presents itself. What's the distinction between these two parashiyot? If we're intentionally taking Matan Torah and dividing it between Yitro on one hand and Mishpatim on the other hand, and we're even emphasizing the linkage between the two, where the first letter of this parsha is Vav, the Aleph, showing these are two halves of one whole, but we're dividing them into two, so what are the nature of these two halves? So what did we receive in Parshat Yitro? Aseret HaDibrot. Good, we're getting to it. The answer is call them out. Go for it. The Aseret HaDibrot. And we talked about this last time in Parshat Yitro, that the Aseret HaDibrot, while we do give them more kavod, we stand for them, there's clearly a significance to them, we're careful about them halakhically not to make it seem like they're more important than the rest of Torah, but there clearly is some level of kavod that we give to them that's different. And we talked about last time how what's happening with the Aseret HaDibrot is that they're not separate from the Torah and more important from the Torah. The reason why they have this unique place is because, according to many Rishonim, that the Aseret HaDibrot contain the entirety of the Torah. Within the Aseret HaDibrot are all of the mitzvot. Within the Aseret HaDibrot is the entire Torah. On the flip side, what is Parshat Mishpatim? It's all the details that go into that Torah. And if we were to take two words that would encompass, possibly, the essence of the Aseret HaDibrot versus the laws in Parshat Mishpatim, two words which those of you who learned before we use a lot to make a distinction are, anybody familiar with them? Yeah, to own it. Klal and Prat. Now we're seeing an interesting distinction here between Klal and Prat. The general overarching principles of Torah that contain all those details, that's Parshat Yitro. And Parshat Mishpatim, those are the details of the Torah. Those are the details of the Aseret HaDibrot. Those are the details of Matan Torah. And these two are totally different. They're very unique. We'll discuss even more so how in a moment. But what these two parshiyot are emphasizing at the same time is that on the one hand, they're totally different, and we need to view them differently. We need to relate to them differently. We need to understand what each one is. What is a klal? What is a general principle? What is it about? And what is a prat? What are the nature of those details? But on the other hand, the two have to come hand in hand. You can't have the klalim, the general principles, without the pratim. That's an incomplete Matan Torah. And you can't have the pratim, the details, without the klalim, the overarching principles. That's also an incomplete Matan Torah. And Chazal emphasized this point in a very different parsha, but say it explicitly. If you take a look, jumping way ahead towards the end of Sefer Vayikra, the opening of Parshat Behar, source number 4. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe Behar Sinai Lemor. God tells Moshe at Har Sinai, saying, and then he gives over the mitzvot of Shemitah. And the fundamental question that's asked in the opening pasuk of God told Moshe at Har Sinai, saying, is what's extraneous in that pasuk? It's underlined. Thank you, Har Sinai. Har Sinai. What does that mean? This was given over at Har Sinai as opposed to what? Everything was given over at Har Sinai. And so Rashi quotes Chazal and says, he asked the question, which certainly in some yeshiva circles, this is kind of a question that's framed as, what does one thing have to do with the other? Ma'inyan Shemitah Itzel Har Sinai. What does Shemitah have to do with Har Sinai? Why are we emphasizing that here? V'lo kol ha-mitzvot nemru b'Sinai. All of the mitzvot were given over at Har Sinai. Says Rashi, quoting Chazal, Elama Shemitah ne'emru klaloteha upratoteha v'diktukeha me'Sinai, just like Shemitah was given over with both its klalim and its pratim in Sinai, as we see here in this parsha and Parshat Behar. Understand from that anything that was given over at Sinai, says Rashi, quoting Chazal, Avkulan ne'emru klalotehen v'diktukehen me'Sinai. Everything that was given over at Sinai was given over as klal and prat. The two always have to come together. You can't have one without the other. You need both halves of Matan Torah. You need both sides of the coin. You need the klal and you need the prat. This parsha, why is it emphasized here? Why by Shemitah? Good questions for another parsha. But this is emphasizing that all of Torah is given over as klal and prat. The two are inseparable. You need both. But there's also an implication that's made by the order of Parshiot, Yitro, and Mishpatim. Which Parsha comes first? Which concept comes first? Klal in Parshat Yitro. And only then, Prat in Parshat Mishpatim. And I think that that's clearly emphasizing the fact that while both are essential and you cannot have one without the other, that which must come first and that which is primary are the klalim. You need the klalim first. And I feel very confident in saying that, because I'm basically paraphrasing the Ramchal in his introduction to Derech Hashem. And I want to read some of that to you right now to understand the beauty of what it means to understand the klalim first, while still then bringing in the pratim. Many don't learn this because it's the introduction to Derech Hashem. For two reasons. One, because it's an introduction, and why would we read an introduction? I would ask the flip side, why would the Ramchal have wasted his time writing an introduction if he didn't want you to read it? So if you're reading his book, read the introduction also, because it's setting the stage for the book. But then he pulls a double whammy. Not only did he write an introduction, he wrote an introduction about how to obtain all knowledge in a very technical way. So it seems both extraneous and uninteresting. And the answer is that it's neither, because he's the Ramchal. And the Ramchal opens up very beautifully. He can't hold back the poetry in the beginning of Derech Hashem. This is the opening words. Yitro midiyat hadvarim al matkonet chalkehem. The advantage of learning things to the point of their nature, of understanding the nature of every single one of their parts. Kifi machlekotam v'sidrei achaseihem. According to the unique properties of each one of their parts and how they interact with one another, midiatam shelo b'havchana, as opposed to understanding without this distinction. Hear the words, beautiful language. Ki yitron ri'at hagan hamihudar ba'arugotav umiyupeh b'vesilotav v'shot mata'av. It's the difference between seeing this beautiful garden with incredible flower beds, and where each one of those flower beds are beautifully arranged amongst each other. This unbelievable sight. That's organized knowledge, where everything has intrinsic meaning and understands its interrelation with the whole. The opposite, Miriat Choresh Hakanim V'Hayar Hatzomeach Bi'irbuv, as opposed to seeing a wild thicket and a forest that's just growing in total disorder. And he goes on to talk about how a person who truly, desperately wants to understand will never quench that thirst for understanding with disorganized knowledge, because everything will seem random, disconnected, unfulfilling. And only through organized knowledge can one come to ultimate truth and come to a sense of being settled in their philosophies of life, in their understanding of the world, in their understanding of Derech Hashem. Fast forwarding a little bit, though I do recommend reading the whole thing, and not just once and not just twice. It says, One needs to understand. A person can't possibly obtain, can't possibly take in all of the details that there are in the world. There are an infinite number of details in reality. And our minds can't hold that. Our minds can't contain that. The Efshar lo ladat kolam, a person can't know all of them. Ula mashera uilo shiyishtadil alav. What's proper for a person to toil at, to work at, hu yidiat haklalim. Our word is to understand the klalim. Ki kol klal b'tivo, because every klal, every general principle by its nature, says the Ramchal, kolel pratim harbei, contains many different details. Ukishiyagia klal echad, when a person grasps one klal, nimsa masig me'elav mispar av min abartim, a person automatically understands many of the details that go into that. V'yavol b'shelo hivchin b'amadayin, even if a person hasn't observed them yet, and don't understand that these are details of this cloud. When a person then gets one of those patim, gathers more information, gathers more of those details. Since that person already knows this general principle, a person will immediately recognize them and know what to do with those details. Why? Because the person already knows this general principle and knows where to put it. Which is impossible without this klal. And this is what our sages said in complete intellectual honesty. He's actually paraphrasing a Midrash Sifrei. But he's very powerfully paraphrasing it, and he doesn't need Chazal to say what he's saying, but he does, and he has it. He paraphrases Chazal and says an incredibly powerful line. So powerful that even though I'm entirely incompetent in typing in Hebrew, I found a website where I could type them on a keyboard on the screen and then copy and paste it and put it on your sheets so you can emblazon it in your minds. Says the Ramchal, Le'olam yihiyu divrei Torah biyadecha klalim velo pratim. Forever, always, Divrei Torah should be in your hands as klalim, as general principles, and not as pratim. That's how one learns Torah. That's how one understands. That's what allows for the synthesis. If you have Parshat Mishpatim without Parshat Yitro, you will never remember Parshat Mishpatim. But if you have Parshat Yitro and you have the klalim of Torah, then when you see the pratim, you can take them and hold them because you need them, because it's the other half of Matatov. But you need to start with the klalim, or else they just can't be contained. Example I like to give, it's like, any of you have been to Eretz Yisrael? Been there for a year, been there for a few weeks, been there for a month, whatever it may be, and you've gone to the Shuk in Yerushalayim on Erev Shabbat. So the first time you go, you're like, I got this. This is great. I'm going to get all of, buy all of Shabbos right now. And you walk and you give a few shekels for the first thing, then you give shekels for the next thing. And then you keep going through the Shuk, and suddenly when you're around a quarter of the way through the Shuk, you've got like 18 bags. And now you realize you're totally stuck. Because every time you try to take another step, somebody slams you on one side and slams you on the other side, and the bags are flying all over you. You're dropping raw, you don't know what to do. And you're thinking to yourself, how do people week in and week out shop here and get all of Shabbos? And you look around and you notice that you're missing a critical element. The booby cart. You're missing a cart. Meaning, if you go to try to gather details without a place to put them, you can't hold them, literally and figuratively. But if you go with the klal, if you go with that basket, if you go with that which can hold those details, that booby cart becomes your Suda Shabbos. And all the details can go inside and you can actually make it through. Simple down-to-earth practical example, but that's on the level of knowledge, that's how all knowledge works. And think about that for your classes, even for your secular college classes. When you're learning, when you're studying the general principles first, and then the details, understanding how they fit with each other, that helps you maintain that knowledge. Memorizing endless flashcards almost guarantees that the day after you will not remember any of the flashcards, which might be your goal. But if it's not, then that's you're going to hold them is to build that principle to which they all go. Kal vachomer b'menosha kal vachomer. When you're coming to Torah, which is infinite, the only way to hold Torah, the only way to contain Torah, is to create those klalim. Is to come in with the Aseret HaDibrot in hand. And then go to the details and pull them in, because then they have a place to go. Then you can keep them. then you can understand how everything fits together. You can see that holistic approach to Torah. Let's take it one step further. And then if there's time, we'll tangent a little bit more. Let's take it one step further inside of the parsha. So we have Parshat Yitro and Parshat Mishpatim, the two halves of Matan Torah. One is bringing down the Klalim, and the other one is bringing down the Pratim, and the two have to come together. But let's look at the way that Parshat Yitro puts forth its Klalim, and the way that Parshat Mishpatim puts forth its Pratim. So let's review. You don't have Chumashim in front of you, so I'll give you the overview, which, considering the long lags between when somebody says something they already know, is good anyway. We'll save time. Okay? Looking at Parshat Mishpatim, yeah, good, that's right, call me out on it. Okay, looking at Parshat Mishpatim, what are the laws that are actually presented and in what order they presented? We're not going to go through all of them, and we won't miss some, but I want to give a general overview of kind of what's the arc here, and hear it and think about it and see where this is going. It starts off with Eved Ivri, dealing with issues of slavery, goes into issues of Makeh, Ish et Re'ehu, when a person goes and hits another person and kills them, issues of murder, intentional murder, accidental murder. Move into issues of property damage. What if my ox gores your ox? What if I dig a hole? What if somebody falls in? We move on to Shomrim. What if I give you something and ask you to guard it for me and something happens to that item? Damages to relationships is next. Issues of seduction, issues of rape. We then deal with the issues of Ger, Yatom, and Almana. The Ger in simple English and not in flowery English is. Yeah, well, I was thinking Sojourner, but I was like, that's because I saw the article at some point, right? So, the Sojourner, the Yatom, the person who's the orphan, and the Almana, the widow. Judges and kings, it's just relating to judges and kings. And then issues of loans. And then after all of that, we then give over the mitzvot of mitzvot relating to Shabbat, and then mitzvot relating to the Chagim. If you were to see a clear division in that presentation of mitzvot, what does it seem to switch from and to? Again, slavery, murder, injury, property damage, shomrim, relationships, ger, yatol, ana, judges, kings, loans, Shabbat, Chagim. Where's the switch? Yes. So all you had to do was speak up. You were waiting for you. Shabbat, the difference between an Adam lechavero and made Adam lemakom. That Parshat Mishpatim seems to move from then Adam lechavero to then Adam lemakom. Issues between man and their fellow man, and issues between then man and God. Famously enough, that I don't think we need to go through the Aseret HaDibrot, which way do the Aseret HaDibrot go? Not that way. There's only one other way, meaning from Ben Adam Limakom to Ben Adam Lichavir. Starting between man and God, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Lo Yeh Elohim Achrim Al Panai, Lo Tisach Mi Lashav, Shabbat, Ben Adam Limakom, and then Lo Tirtzach, Lo Tignov, Ishus Ben Adam Lichavir. So it's interesting that the Klal Parsha of Yitro goes from Adam Lemakom to Adam Lechaviro, whereas the Prat part of Sefer of Matan Torah goes from Ben Adam Lechaviro to Ben Adam Lemakom in the opposite order. Implying something about the nature of Klalim versus the nature of Pratim. That the nature of Klalim, well, what was happening, the nature of Kalim tend to be, think about Parshat Yitro, I mean, it's a wild Parsha. God, the thunder and lightning and the mountain and the shaking and God speaking, and it's wild. We're looking as the seven heavens open up to the greatest depths that we can see of reality. The Klalim are often more removed, more separated, more transcendental. There are these overarching concepts. They're conceptual. They exist in my mind. It's very hard for me to go and pick up a klal, which is not a thing. And so in the Parsha of Klalim, we start with the more transcendental, and then we come down to the more practical, the more earthy, the Bin Adam L'Chaveiro. But once we flip it, and then we come to the Parsha of the details, to a Parsha that's dealing with the Pratim of Torah, the details I can grasp, the details are very specific, finite, limited, in front of me, I can see them. And so that Parsha works from Bein Adam L'Chaveiro up to Bein Adam L'Makom. You have on one side, again, let's even do it this way, you have on one side Bein Adam L'Makom coming down to Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, on the other side Bein Adam L'Chaveiro coming first, and then the Makom is second. If you were to just take a look at this image, if you can see it as an image, does that reflect anything to you? When Larabi asked this question, I sat there and said, I have no idea. And then like three people on the show that I was listening to like immediately got it, so I figured I'd take a shot at it. They all said... Sorry, you said something. No? Reminded them of Sulam Yaakov. Again, I didn't see that either. But it's a very beautiful point once we add content to it. Which is that when Yaakov has his dream, he sees, source number 7, Vayachalom v'hinei sulam mutzav arza, there's a sulam with its feet firmly planted in the ground, roshu magia shamayim, and it's, the head of it's going all the way up to heaven, v'hinei malachei Elohim olim v'yordim bo, there are malachei Elohim going up and down, that you need both sides. And he points out that that's one of the layers of meaning to the fact, matches are only meaningful once you add the content, that Sulam is the same gematria as Sinai. That there is some clear, the Svarim bring down, there's some clear interrelationship between, and there's many layers to this, but there's an intrinsic relationship between the Sulam of Yaakov and Har Sinai, that the two share an intrinsic numeric value to pull that together. And that it requires both the going up and the coming down. Both ways, both mediums, both sides of Torah. Moving from the Klalim down to the Pratim and from the Pratim back up to the Klalim. And you need both. One needs both. And this is also emphasized in these parashiyot. In both parashiyot Yitro and Mishpatim, there are moments where we realize, or where something happens, where things seem to go a little bit wrong. We just said that the Parsha of Matan Torah, of Yitro, of the Klalim, of the starting with Ben Alakom, these big overarching principles, seeing into the seven heavens, this whole transcendental experience. You know what came along with them experiencing that transcendental reality? Let me tell you what happened to them. It's a Gemara. God came down. And God said the first of the Aseret HaDibrot. Gemara. And God said, Anochi. And when God said Anochi, it was such an overwhelming spiritual experience of feeling God, of feeling the transcendental in this world, that our bodies couldn't take it. And our souls were so elevated that the word slammed our souls out of our bodies, and our souls started to fly up to Shemayim. So this is the Gemara. Not everybody was happy about that. The Malachim were very upset. Because the Malachim know that if we don't exist, they don't exist. We talked about that last week's Parsha. Without the Torah, there is no world. Without the world, there are no Malachim. Everything is here for us. And they said, no, we want to keep existing! So the Malachim ran, and they grabbed the souls, and they shoved them back into the bodies. That seemed a little bit frightening. Imagine what it must have been like for it to actually happen. Right? Push them back into the bodies. And they were like, oh, that was intense. I mean, you probably said it like that. I feel like that's a very 90s thing to say, right? It's very intense. And then so God goes, after Anochi, Hashem, and the whole thing happens again. Elokecha, again and again and again for the first two deep roads. To the point where finally Klal Yisrael turns to Moshe and they're like, that that was great. That was nice. We get it. I have a better plan. You go up to the mountain, since you seem to not have this body soul departing thing. You go up to the mountain, you get the dipper, you bring him down, and we'll listen to you. And that's in the psukim. It's hinted to in the psukim. I'll bring it up, but it's hinted in the psukim. Take a look in source number 8. And Matan Torah. Vayomruel Moshe, the underline. Vayomruel Moshe. Dibera Talimanu, you tell us what God has to say. Vinishma. And we'll listen. Don't let God talk to us directly. Why? Penamut. The dying thing is not working for us. So on the one end, you have this the importance of the Kalim and the importance of this transcendental side of Torah. But if you just live there, it's very dangerous. Penamut. Okay, fine. So let's focus on the other side. So on the other side, we go to the detail side of Torah first. We go from the details up. But there's danger there as well. In the conclusion of our parsha, of Parshat Mishpatim, it's a very interesting paragraph. All the people that we mentioned in source number 1, Moshe, Aaron, Nadav, Avihu, the Shivim Zakenim, they all go walk toward the mountain. And there's these very lofty psukim that we're not going to get into the details of. Vayal Moshe v'Aaron Nadav Avihu v'Shim Zikim Zikim Yisrael. So Moshe, Aaron, Nadav Avihu in the 70 Zikim Bnei Yisrael. Source number 9. Go up. Perech Abdal Pasuk Tet. No Pasuk Yud. Vayir'u et Elohei Yisrael. And they saw the God of Israel. Whatever that means. They obviously didn't see an actual image. But they saw something. V'tachat raglav kima'asei livnat ha-sapir. And underneath God's legs, so to speak, was like sapphire brickwork. And like this, the heavens in purity. I mean, they saw something really incredible. Whatever it was, they saw something really incredible at the end of Parshat Mishpatim. Next pasuk. Ve'el atzilei b'nei Yisrael lo shalach yado. And to the atzilei b'nei Yisrael, God did not send out his hand. What does sending out God's hand usually mean or imply? What does God do when he sends out his hand? Punishment. Usually somebody dies. Right? God didn't kill the Atzilei B'nei Yisrael, and most understand the Atzilei B'nei Yisrael to mean the youngsters. It means those who were younger. So we've got a few characters at play here. We've got a few individuals at play here. So my guess is the youngsters weren't the Zakenim, because that would totally contradict each other, right? Zakenim means elders. So we can take the Zakenim out. Of Moshe Aaron and Nadav and Avihu, who are the elders and who are the youngsters? What? Say again? Moshe and Aaron are older, and Nadav and Avihu are younger. They're his kids. They're Aaron's kids. So it seems to be that God wanted to strike out against Nadav and Avihu, which we learn later on is true, and Chazal tell us that that punishment actually comes about in Parshat Shmini, when he does take Nadav and Avihu's life as compensation for what happens here. But what happened here? Why was he angry at Nadav and Avihu? End of the pasuk. Because, as the Mefarshim understand, Vayechazu et ha'elokim vayochlu vayishtu. Because they saw God and they ate and drank. They saw God and they ate and drank. What's the problem with that? Because I'll say that it was like a person sits and has lunch with their friend. They were kind of having lunch with God. Here's the thing, you don't have lunch with God. That's not how it works. They lacked a sense of reverence for what was happening. And the way Rabbi explains it in the context of this parasha is that a person has to be careful. If you start down at the pratim, at the details, you get down and really earthy between Adam and Chaviro, the down-to-earth mitzvot of what happens with damages and property and slaves and all of these very earthy mitzvot. And then you work your way up to the klalim. There's a big danger there of not understanding what you're linking back into, how transcendental those klalim are, how far they go, that we're going back to the Aseret HaDibrot Matan Torah. And they didn't realize that they lacked the reverence to understand what they were seeing, and they had the audacity to eat and drink at that moment. To eat and drink when they saw the vision. To eat and drink at Har Sinai. In contrast to whom? Who doesn't eat and drink at Har Sinai? Who? Moshe. Not only does he not drink on Har Sinai, Moshe tells us in Sefer Devarim, I was up there for 40 days and 40 nights, lechem lo achalti v'mayim lo shatiti, I think it's the end of the pasuk, v'mayim lo shatiti. Moshe understands you can't eat and drink in the presence of God. In the moment of Matan Torah, when we sit and we eat at our tables, it should be like a Mizbeach, that's a different inyan. But when we're literally standing there at Matan Torah, you're not eating and drinking. And we see that both are very dangerous without the other. The two halves of Matan Torah join together with Avat because they must come together. And in our generation, we suffer terribly from this issue of either focusing on the klalim or focusing on the pratim. And it's something that we need to really take to heart. You see, many people in our generation who focus singularly on the pratim. You look at many, many yeshivot, certainly sent many, many midrashot as well. And the only thing that we're learning is details. The only thing that we're learning are the pratim of Torah, to the exclusion of all else. In yeshivas, people sit down, there are two options in yeshiva. What can you learn from yeshivas? What are your two options? Gemara or... Or Gemara. Gemara or Gemara. Gemara or Halacha. Those are your options. The details of the Halachot or the Gemara. Now, when we say Gemara, we don't mean all of Gemara. Careful. You could get thrown out of Yeshiva. Right? When we say Gemara, we mean the Halachic Gemaras. The Lundish Gemaras. What do we skip over? Because, of course, why would we bother learning them? The Agadah, the stories. Why would we read stories? Because all we're just giving a break to people who couldn't hack it. Right? And we only focus on the details. And we've become so detail-oriented. And we could spend endless amounts of times on a sugya. How does this detail work? How does that detail work? How does this go? And that's very important. And it's a very important piece of Torah. The details of the halacha, the details of those gemarot. But when we're detail-oriented to the exclusion of the klalim, you get a Judaism that's missing its transcendental side. That's missing its klalim. That's missing that unifying aspect of Torah that makes it one Torah that totally encompasses my entire life. And you very often, unfortunately, do see people who are even learning all day, if they're learning in this way, not all of them, but many of them, when they get up and leave the Beit Midrash, they don't act like a Ben Torah. Because they're not a Ben Torah. They're a Ben Pratim. They've got a lot of details, but they have no idea how to bring that together into a life. Into a life of Torah. It stems from, in my humble opinion, the way that the place, and there's discographic reasons for this as well, where reality as a whole has come to. You've come to a place in reality where everything is very detail-oriented. You all have to pick your majors, because when you pick your major, you have to get to the details of the details of the details of what you're going to study. And then when you go to, on, let's say you're, I'm not going to ask who's going to medical school. The answer is no one in this room. We've done that before. But conspirators are like, how many people go into medical school? Nobody's name, like, is this a Jewish college? So speakers always get like taken aback by that, right? But if you go on, you study medicine in undergrad, you take your pre-med requirements, then you go on to medical school, and then you have to figure out exactly what detail you're going to go into. Think about how medicine works. You don't have the general practitioner anymore. That doesn't exist. There's no village doctor who's going to come and take care of you if you don't feel well. If you have an issue, you need to go and see the doctor who specializes in the specific issues of the inner left ear. That person can solve your problem. You'll go to that specialist. It's where the world is. The way we look at food, which is also similarly just as destructive. We used to eat food. Now we don't eat food. That's why on boxes we put things and we talk about nutrients. These are the nutrients you need, and I know that I'm going to put that on the box. You need these nutrients. The food is irrelevant. It's just a delivery system for the nutrients that I know that you need, even though you don't know what they are. But the whole world is moving to become more and more and more and more detail-oriented. And it can become very destructive. Eating like that is very destructive. That's why America, which is so hyper-obsessed with healthy eating through the process of nutrient intake, is the most unhealthy nation in the world. It's why you can go to a doctor, and a doctor, if they specialize in that way, can cause tremendous problems. If you, one, this is a very extreme example. But when my grandfather, Lava Shalom, he was at the end of his life, he was mamash on his deathbed. And my uncle was there, who's an ophthalmologist, and they start wheeling my grandfather out of the room. He's got a few days left to live. And my uncle jumps and says, where are you taking him? Like, well, I reviewed his chart. He has a hernia. We need to take him for hernia surgery. And my uncle looks at me and says, he has an aggressive brain tumor. If you put him into surgery, you're going to kill him. At which point I says, oh my God, you're right. But that doctor came in and was looking at that small piece of the chart and didn't see the whole. If you only look at the pratim, you end up in a reality of literally, figurative death. So too by Torah. Both halves of Matan Torah have to come together. On the flip side, it's not. The flip side is also true. You see, in this day and age, people who come out and they're only interested in the spiritual side of Judaism. Big picture. I'm a God Jew. I'm going to do everything very godly, very spiritual. Mitzvot, we'll get to it. But as long as I'm living with God, as long as I'm a spiritual person, what more could God want from me? And the answer is Parshat Mishpatim. Is that you need to bring that down and move it somewhere. It's something that we struggle with, this dichotomy in our day and age. We tend to skew toward the pratim, but we've all seen the rise recently of more Klali Jews as well. And what these parshiot are teaching us, and with this we'll finish up, what these parshiot of Yitro and Mishpatim are teaching us is that Matan Torah, again, just to review, has two halves. You need Parshat Yitro, and to the detriment of much of many places within the yeshiva system and the seminary system, you need to start with the Klalim. The Klalim come first. Matan Torah, the Aseret Dibrot come first. Yitro comes first because the Klalim come first. We need to come back to a place where we see the big picture first. We see the overarching principles first. But not to stop there. Then we need to unite that with the details, because that's the second half of Matan Torah, and the two must be united. That Vav is perhaps the most important letter in this entire parasha. Drawing together those two polar opposites that are really two halves of one whole. And reminding us that we need to spend time on the Klalim, the bigger picture of Torah, the overarching principles of Torah, the Hashkafa, the Midrashim, the Agadot, Shir Klali. Isn't that interesting? I seem to be a Klali kind of person, and the same of the Shir is weird. Right? The Klali side of Torah. That's why we talk about narrative, that's why we talk about overarching principles. Right? The Klalim, and then we need to bring that in, we need to move that over to, and also then bring all of the beautiful, glorious, incredible details of Torah. Once we have a place to hold them, we need to put them into those places, and we need to live the Pratim the same way we live the Klalim. We need to learn the Halachot, every one to its finest detail. We need to learn those Sugyot, those Lamdish Sugyot, all the way to the bottom of their Emes. Or Emet. You guys know better than we do anyway. You don't have this issue in your Gemara learning. But that's what we need to do. So Bezrat Hashem, we should all be Zoche and these Parshiot to experience a full Kabbalat HaTorah, a full Matan Torah, where we see the seven heavens open up and have a vision of the loftiest nature and feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence in our lives and see the Klalim of Torah. And with that, empowering us to go and enter into the nitty-gritty details of life and see the Halachot that are there and bring them together to live as a full Torah Jew. Bezrat Hashem.